Today's podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, let's get it going right here, right now. This is Diamond Conversations, and you are listening to the newest installment of the Diamond Conversations podcast here on the Place to Be Nation podcasting empire. If you didn't know by now, my name is Chad, and every single week I bring you a brand new guest, and we have a Diamond Conversation talking about this week a hot topic in the world of professional baseball. But usually we mix it up a little bit. We have every single kind of guest you can possibly imagine, whether it's a player, whether it's a coach, whether it's an announcer, whether it's a writer, an author, a commentator. If they're talking baseball, if they're living baseball, we are rapping here on Diamond Conversation. So today's episode, well, it brings the worlds together. It's the old colliding worlds theory as I bring my wrestling podcast world into the baseball podcast world. And I welcome in independent wrestling star, the Man of Steel, Mike Verna, who is an absolute rising star in the ranks of independent wrestling, a guy with the body of a Greek god, or maybe an Italian god in this instance, but somebody with charisma, somebody with the skill, somebody with the background, and also going to find out that he's got a very deep baseball background as well. And that, of course, is the focus of this Diamond Conversation today. Now, the timing on it was absolutely unbelievable. As the news had broken earlier in the day about the Astros suspensions, the Astros firings, and the possible repercussions that are going to be coming down throughout Major League Baseball regarding this cheating scandal that was not only in the Houston Astros organization, but also kind of spread in other aspects of the game. We see the Boston Red Sox have been investigated for this scandal as well. Their manager, Alex Cora, really awaiting, as we record this, harsh penalties, what it's been said. And we get Mike's take on it, because Mike is an assistant coach at Kingsborough Community College in Brooklyn, New York. He does a lot of different things, which he will talk about in the show, but he kind of gives us a coach's perspective here and when it's the right time to kind of maybe explore the gamesmanship of the game and absolutely when it is downright cheating. So we get to kind of break that down from a coach's perspective, but to learn more about Mike and what he's done in his baseball career and to see how he's blossoming in his wrestling career, it's a great time to do this interview. It's a great time to not only talk wrestling for a couple minutes, because I know on Place to Be Nation it's very wrestling centric, but it's also cool to talk to somebody who's also a fellow Met fan, but who has some really cool ties to the game of baseball. So I want to thank Mike for coming on here. We were talking about possibly having him back on in a few weeks. I want to do some sort of baseball preview. I've got a couple names in mind that I'm going to kind of dig into the database and bring out for this baseball preview. Maybe break down the divisions, maybe break down some key teams, things to watch, stuff like that, switch it up a little bit and see how that goes. But Mike already expressed interest in coming back to do it because, I mean, come on. What's better than talking baseball with like-minded individuals and people who have a passion for the game? I really think there's not much better out there in terms of something you can listen to as you prepare for the huge 2020 baseball season just around the corner. I mean, pitchers and catchers reporting next month. I can't wait for that to get here. Don't like these dog days of winter. Don't like the cold, don't like the rain. So let's end this and let's get down to spring training and get ready to play some ball. So let's do a little housekeeping. If you want to follow the show, the Twitter handle is at Diamond Convo. If you want to follow me, it's at Chad EMB. And if you're on Facebook and want to give the show page a like, it is Diamond Conversations Baseball Podcast. I mean, you're not going to get much more than show links and kind of some reference points, but it's just showing me some support, and I appreciate everybody who's listening. I appreciate everybody who's tuning in to Diamond Conversations, and let's kind of get this thing moving forward here into the 2020 year. The calendar already starting to go by day, and you're about to strap in and listen to a great little interview here with the Man of Steel, Mike Verna. We'll be right back. Well, let's get back in here on Diamond Conversations here on the Place to Be Podcasting Network. I feel like I'm in somewhat of a bizarro world as I bring my two podcasting entities together. I put on my baseball cap, but maybe put on my wrestling attire for this one, because I'm really happy to be joined by a rising star in the world of professional wrestling, but also, and this is how we tie it into Diamond Conversations, an assistant baseball coach at Kingsborough Community College in beautiful Brooklyn, New York. I am absolutely stoked and jazzed to be joined by the Man of Steel, Mike Verna. Thank you so much for joining me on Diamond Conversations.
Oh, thank you, Chad. That was, A, one of the best introductions I've gotten in a podcast, and B, you took the words out of my mouth, the best of both worlds. My two loves in between ones. It's like I'm having dinner with my wife and my girlfriend at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one of them, you got to sneak through the kitchen to get to one of those dates. Because it's funny for me, you know, every time I have a baseball interview, I always try to dial into some of my wrestling background. But with you, obviously, I don't really need to try that hard with that, because I'm sure we could sit here. We can equate the politics of baseball and the inner workings of baseball to the politics and inner workings of pro wrestling, probably till the cows come home. But we can get to that later on in the conversation. How you doing tonight, man? What's going on in your world?
I'm doing good. I actually just left practice as we speak. I shot you a Twitter DM. I was like, you know what, man? I'm on a baseball high right now. Let's bang this out before I go to the gym. Screw after 8. Let's do it now. You know? it's been a good day. It's been a good day.
Yeah, it's been a great day for you. It's been a great day for me. If you're a member of the Houston Astros organization, it might not be a great day. If your name's Alex Cora, it might not be a great day. If your name's Carlos Beltran, the manager of our beloved New York Mets, you might be sweating it out a little bit, but I think you're going to be okay. But what the hell do you take of this crazy news that's come down today that they finally brought down the hammer on A.J. Hinch and the Houston Astros?
Before we get to that, it's funny. When I was waiting for your phone call, I was scrolling through Twitter, and Paul LaDuca just tweeted something that absolutely popped me. For the non-wrestling fans, the term pop, it usually made me laugh hysterical. He tweeted, "I wish Carlos Beltran knew the sign stealing in the 2006 playoffs."
Wow. Jeez.
I was driving here, and I said, yes, I agree, Paul. I agree. Well, you know what? It's a wild day, to say the least. And I was telling my dad before, because we both got the ESPN notifications on our phone, that I was actually shocked that they fired A.J. Hinch and the general manager. I was actually shocked. So, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, first of all, the $5 million fine, I mean, I think that's basically peanuts to a billion-dollar organization. So the fine is nothing. The draft picks don't really matter either. The Astros are elite. They have a young core. They're a quality team. They're going to be quality for at least another four years max. So the draft picks as well, I don't think, was that massive of a punishment. When they originally announced that Hinch and the GM, I forget the GM's name, but when they originally got the year-long suspension, I said, okay, that's pretty tough, but I guess that's probably the most harsh punishment of the three. And then when I saw the news that the Astros fired them, I was kind of taken aback by that. I was pretty shocked. I mean, we're talking about A.J. Hinch, who is pretty much, let's put it this way, in Major League Baseball this day and age, for you to be a manager, it's the role itself has decreased a bit compared to any other sport, especially football. It's not, and I was talking to a scout about this the other day, not to get too off topic, but I asked a scout by the name of Dan Palumbo of the Philadelphia Phillies. I was at an Italian baseball meeting for the upcoming season. And we were just bullshitting at the end of the dinner. And I was saying, like, because they were talking about Girardi's hiring with the Phillies. And, you know, as Mets fans, we went through Mickey Callaway, and we were pretty close to getting Girardi from what he said. And Joe wanted to come to us, which is very interesting, which is another sad situation, but we'll get there later in the conversation. And I said to him, again, what do these front offices really view the managers these days? Like, what is the real big view? And he's like, well, that's the reason why Girardi isn't with the Mets. It's like they don't view front offices don't view managers the way NFL coaches get viewed. And it's a very front office type of thing when it comes to on-field managing. I mean, yeah, in-game situations and pitching changes and any situations like that is a big deal for field managers. But in regards to the lineups and the 25-man roster and all that, that's coming from the front office. But when you look at a guy like A.J. Hinch and you realize his success and his relationship with the front office over the last close to a decade, I imagine, he's up there with the elite. You know, he's up there with Terry Francona and guys like that. So to see them really fire him for, believe it or not, a very common thing in baseball, sign stealing, it kind of shocked me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and if you see the reports, I mean, it seems like he was the least implicated, but I guess because he is the game manager, he's going to take the big part of the heat. You know, I mean, it really looks like Alex Cora was really, you know, the mastermind and the guy who went through with all the implementation of these devices that they use and the trash cans and all that good stuff. But the game manager itself, it's crazy to see how much it's been devalued in the game of baseball, because you think of those stoic managers that were, it was their team. I mean, it was their squad. It was the guys respected the manager. And now it seems like the manager is the buddy and he's just basically, you know, an older, more experienced, you know, pal who's on the bench with you rather than that guy who's going to want to, you know, beat your ass if something happens in the game.
The crazy thing is now in this era, if you look at the ages of some of the managers, they're not that old a guy anymore.
No.
They're hiring these young rookie guys that can technically still play.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's the crazy thing. And that brings down exactly your point about the devaluation of a manager. It's like they're just looking someone potentially, you know, with all due respect to the position of a field manager, as a babysitter. And back to your point about Cora being the mastermind of it, it's true. And you look at it, when you have that mentor figure or, you know, the leader of the club, for lack of a better word, and you see him getting the heat and you see him getting the punishment for this, you got to imagine how some of these players may be feeling now, that they pretty much got their leader fired for this. You know, and I read the quotes too, where, you know, it's pretty much known that Hinch wasn't the guy that was behind it. He knew it was happening. But, you know, he wasn't the guy that was pulling the strings. And it's very, very interesting, like you said as well, to see what happens with Alex Cora with the Red Sox. And I got a funny story about sign stealing, actually, because when I heard all this, I look at it now at the college level. And I am guilty as charged with sign stealing. Not to this degree, though. And I'll tell you a little story, because hopefully this doesn't get me in trouble. So we're playing our regional rivals last spring, and we were pretty much... We were 1-2 in the region for a while. We fell off towards the end. We still made the regional conference tournament, but we fell off in regards to seeding. So we went into this series as the 2. They were the 1. And to this one team, which is Suffolk, it's the Long Island region of colleges in New York, they knew we were the threat. They knew we were a quality team. They knew we were there. The players were coached well. We have a good culture on our team, everything like that. And we're playing game 1, and it's a close game. And I'm sitting there in the dugout because I'm like I told you off the record, I'm the bench coach as well as the catching instructor for the team. So I'm not on the bases. I'm in the dugout. The manager coaches third base. And when the manager came back to the dugout when we were going to go play defense, I told him, I said, you know, Brian, they're telegraphing their pitch calling, because the coach, the manager, was calling the pitches to the catcher from the dugout, and his signs to the catcher were so readable. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, he's going by touches. There's no indicator, there's no nothing. It's just, he's going by touches, and he's going by touches to a certain part of the face. So I'm looking at it, and I'm putting it to my head. I'm saying, okay, nose is a curveball, tip of the hat is a fastball, ear is a changeup. And I just start doing it to myself, and I see, okay, and I'm seeing the pitch. And I'm saying, he's telegraphing these. So I went up to the players, 1-9, I said, guys, he's telegraphing his pitch calling. All right, the catcher's not calling the game, the manager's calling the game. If you'd like... I don't want to take you guys out of your at-bats, because here's the thing about pitch calling or basically telegraphing a pitch to your player or to your teammate. Now you put them into a mentality where they expect the pitch to come. And
right.
What happens sometimes, especially at the college level, if the catcher doesn't read it from the coach directly, then he's calling his own pitch. So now if the hitter's expecting a curveball and the catcher and the coach get crossed up and there's a fastball coming, now you put your hitter in a situation where they're not ready to react on a 90-mile-per-hour fastball, and they're waiting for the dude.
Right.
So I told him, here's what we're going to do. He's calling the pitches. I see it. I'm going to call you by your last name if it's an off-speed pitch. If it's a fastball, I'm going to call you by your first name. So we'd go like, all right, Abner, what do you say now, Abner? And you know it's a fastball coming. Or I'll say, okay, Williams, what do you say now, Williams? Man, I'm second, Williams. It'd be a curveball. So they were picking up on it, and then the hits started coming, and the hits started coming. And the coach still didn't recognize. The point being is it worked out in our favor. We didn't win the game, but it worked out in our favor. And the funny thing is the regionals came on. So the regionals now is the playoffs in college. And we were playing them. We ended up in the 4 seed. They were the 1 seed. So we dropped from the 2 to the 4 seed. We played them in game 1, and we were beating them 4-0 until the 8th inning, in which they ended up beating us 6-4. Sucky, but it worked out. But a lot of that had to do with them recognizing, so without me calling it, they step out of the box, they get the sign from the third base coach, and at the same time, they would look at their manager of the opposing team, and they would get hit signs to the catcher. So it kind of almost worked out as their own little sign-stealing scheme, but there wasn't anything with monitors or cameras. So me personally, I don't feel guilty, and I don't feel like we were bending the rules. I think it's kind of one of those unwritten rules in baseball.
Right. Like
if you're showing
right.
me your sign, it's going to be taken advantage of, you know?
Yeah, and that's basically, you know, what I think most of the, you know, the pundits and all the veterans and the people who are talking are saying is like, look, we're not saying sign stealing or anything's never been a part of the gamesmanship of the game or, you know, getting the one up on the opposing player, but taking it to that level is insane, especially if you see the stats and the breakdown of the home and away during the postseason in 2017, and the Astros go on an 8-1 tear at home. I mean,
great.
And 18 home runs. I mean, that's insane, you know. And I don't want I don't want to take anything away from the players themselves, because I know there are players that did not want to take part in it, and they've said that it was not an active investigation against everyone. But still, I mean, that's really that is really concerning.
I mean, yeah, the numbers were staggering. That was the big thing. I think they were batting .386 at home or something like that. Some kind of crazy average where it's like, yeah, that shows that this was clearly effective. And remember this too. I'm talking at the collegiate level. You talk at the pro level. I mean, if a pro big leaguer knows a curveball is coming, they know exactly how to attack an off-speed pitch. So it's not like you're at the college level. They're still kids. You know, and they're still kind of feeling their oats when it comes to hitting. Hitting is the hardest thing in sports to do. It's statistically the hardest thing for sports to do. But when you're a pro player and you're a pro hitter, you know that art like the back of your hand. So if you know a curveball is coming, I mean, it's basically like a batting practice fastball. I don't care how nasty it is.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. So kind of tell us more a little bit about what you do with your role with Kingsborough. So you said you act as a bench coach. And tell us a couple more of the duties you have.
Yeah, sure. So this is my second year now at the college level. I coached. I was an assistant coach for my high school for almost a decade. So a little backstory with me is when I was 18, entering my senior year of high school, rather, I batted .370. I was first baseman. I had a great, great, great year. We made it to the semifinals in New York City, Final Four. We played at MCU Park. My junior year, we played at Shea Stadium. So as a Met fan yourself, I think you know how awesome that is.
I do,
in
indeed.
The final year of, the final year of Shea Stadium. We lost in the city championship that year, which sucked. But, I mean, it's a memory I'll never forget. The following year, my senior year, same thing. We had a really good team. I was the only senior starter. So we had a really young team, and I could tell. I was like, all right, this is either going to go really bad in my last year or really good selfishly, because I was the only senior starter. It ended up all coming together, and we had a really good year. And then senior year came along, and I had a couple of offers from local schools. I feel like now is a little bit different from 10 years ago when I was in high school going into college. The recruiting process is a lot more technology-based.
Yeah.
It's a lot more there's an app called Field Level. I mean, you can put videos out there, stuff like that. When I was in high school, it was a lot of word of mouth, like a lot of recommendations from coaches, a lot of coaching visits, a lot of school visits. It really wasn't there as much as it is now for these kids. So the whole recruiting process for me was very New York-based. For some reason, I really always wanted to stay home. I didn't really have the itch to go away. I really liked everything home. I liked all my friends stayed home. So I was like a kid. I just wanted to enjoy that side of college. And when the time came, I was faced with the passion of pro wrestling. And the funny thing is at the time, pro wrestling was my passion and baseball was a job. And because baseball was a job, I don't want to say I lost the passion for it, but it became grueling. And then you reach a crossroad in your life where it's like, all right, I'm 18 now. I want to party a little bit. I want to have fun and I want to pursue this pro wrestling thing. And I still want to play baseball. And I was playing competitively in a men's league in the summer. And I was sitting there to myself. I said, okay, do I stay home, which I was going to do anyway, and play 4 years of college baseball and never get to pursue wrestling and then play baseball in the summer and not really have a social life? Or do I pursue wrestling and be a college guy? And at the time, I chose wrestling. And it was a big decision, and I tell it to my kids all the time because now, you know, they're young adults, they're about to be men, and they have that same crossroad where they're like, yeah, you know, I love baseball, but I want to party. You know, I'm missing practice because I was out last night. And we don't stand for that, just to be clear. But we have these heart-to-hearts with them where we try to feel them out, like, where are you going when it comes to this? Because at the JUCO level, we have the ability to basically, like, we sent guys last year in their second year to D1s, to D2s. Like, we're one of the most trusted JUCOs in all of New York. Like, if we have a program that's a D2 or even a D1 or a D3 4 year that has a player that's not necessarily prepared for that level yet, they send them to us because they know we're going to coach them well. They know we're going to prepare them well with strength and conditioning. And we know that they're going to hopefully put together a good season. And then we send them off to the promised land. So with me, it kind of came down to that choice where it's like, okay, what do I do? And I chose wrestling. And at the time, I didn't regret it. Now I kind of regret it a little bit only because I missed the game so much. And thank God for my old high school coach, because when I told him I wasn't going to do this, he automatically offered me a job. He said, okay, if you're not going to play, then you have a career in coaching. And I didn't know anything about that at the time, but I said, oh, I mean, okay, I get to stay around the game, and I can still do this wrestling thing. So it was the best of both worlds for me, is the point I'm trying to make. So it kind of led me to coaching. You know, I mean, the funny thing is now baseball is my passion and wrestling's work. So the tables kind of turn, but I definitely get the best of both worlds. And the funny thing is if I didn't choose wrestling at that time, I wouldn't be where I am right now. And, yeah, you know, you put me over so beautifully in the opening monologue, and you said, you know, I mean, you're right. I mean, thank God not to stroke myself on the back. You're right. You know, I wouldn't have been able to get to the point I am now in wrestling if I didn't choose it over my first love, which was baseball. So I really have no regrets, and I have even more no regrets now, the fact that I'm coaching at a high-level college. I work with the Italian national baseball team. Things are great now. You know, like, it all worked out in the long run. I miss playing more than anything, but hey, there's a fast pitch softball, and that's what I do every single weekend in the summer.
That's
so I get
great.
The best of both.
See, if I couldn't like you anymore, you had to throw in the Italian national thing too. I mean, my God, that's fantastic. Yeah, what a great story. And I'm sure too, you know, you mentioned strength and conditioning. You know, I'm sure that your guys probably lean on you a little bit for some tips, because they don't call him the Man of Steel for nothing, folks. If you can look up Mike after you listen to this interview, you could see that this guy is built like a brick shit house, as they would say. You know, how much of that do you play into your coaching? Do you share tips with the guys? Do you make sure that they're on a good regimen and they're watching, you know, maybe not too many, too much on the weights, maybe a little more of the conditioning? Like, where do you kind of fall with that?
100%. The greatest thing about it is our manager, Brian Dowd, he also has a really good background and certifications in strength and conditioning. So between the two of us, we kind of balance out. And mind you this too, you know, my look, my build, I only started getting into strength and conditioning over the last 3 years, which was at DeFranco's gym, which is run by Triple H's trainer, Joe DeFranco.
Yes, it is. Yep.
That helped better my career in the ring, because I was always a bodybuilder. I was always lifting weights. I was always, you know, all about getting big, getting strong, not really caring so much about the strength and conditioning side, which actually leads to your flexibility, injury prevention, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, once I started learning this, I realized that these players, they can't lift like a bodybuilder. Any baseball player, no matter what you see, no matter how big they are, how strong they are, they'll never lift like a bodybuilder. So it's weird, because they'll always kind of have, not necessarily the Pete Alonso body, which is very thick and beefy, but they'll never really necessarily be ripped either. You know, it's kind of this fine line of like Mike Trout, like really solid and built, but not necessarily donning a six pack or chiseled from head to toe. And that has a lot to do with just being strong. And if you look at Pete is strong as hell.
Right.
You know, you're hitting 500 home runs. You don't have to have the most glamorous body in the world. You're built like an ox. So that's the beautiful thing about strength and conditioning. So that's what I really like to push over to these guys, is that do these workouts, do these hard workouts that aren't traditional things that you're going to see on YouTube that these bodybuilders are doing and stuff like that. Because it's funny, you look back at the Mets, I forgot what year it was. I think it was probably 2017. Yeah. And when Noah Syndergaard tore his lat.
Yeah.
That had a lot to do with their strength and conditioning coach. And he wasn't necessarily training them to endure. He was training to get them strong rather than enduring a 162 game season. You know, so, I mean, those injuries, that's the biggest thing with weightlifting for any kind of athlete, especially a baseball player more than anyone, is you have to find the balance of getting strong and in good shape, as well as being strong to endure a long season.
And
that's the real happy medium.
And I'm just sorry to interrupt you. That was the year that they had basically every single regular go on the disabled list at some point.
Exactly, exactly. And what happened the next year? They all got fired.
Yeah.
The entire staff. So that was an exact, you're 100% right. That was that year that everyone got hurt. And it was clear that they just weren't being trained the way to last. And that's the thing you look at now, too, even at the college level. I remember last year we were having injuries. When I coached high school, it's a 16-game regular season. You maybe get 20 to 30 games total. The college level, you're looking at almost 60 games. And then you look at playoffs and regionals, which is a whole nother thing. You got we're in the CUNY conference, which is all the city universities in New York. And then we have a regional conference, which is including Long Island as well. Then if you win the regionals, you go to the districts where you'll play the best New York team will play the best New England team. The winner of that goes to the World Series, right, which will be the top teams in the nation. So, I mean, the season is long. So the biggest thing we were seeing last year is we were seeing some injuries, and it actually helped modify our plan for this year because you see what these guys can handle compared to, you know, what they need to actually be able to handle when it comes to the season. So it's crazy.
No, that's insane. Yeah, I mean, it's such a different beast now than it was, you know, let's even say 20 years ago. There's such an emphasis on everything when it comes to training, conditioning, and how the game is played. And, you know, you could go back to what we were saying at the beginning of this interview, talking about, you know, the video and how that has changed in the game. But before I move into the Mets, which I want to talk to before we get into the wrap-up, I got to ask you, so where do you fall in the, you know, modern baseball versus kind of old-school baseball debate? And that's been something I think I asked every single person that's been on the show so far. Like, where do you kind of find yourself leaning towards? Are you more of a stat analytical guy, or are you more just a, you know, good pitching beats good hitting kind of guy?
Oh, 100% good pitching beats good hitting any day. So it's funny that you say that. I was actually having this discussion at the baseball meeting the other day with the scout for the Italian team, with some of the scouts and whatnot. And a lot of those guys, especially like the guy Dan Palumbo I mentioned earlier, he's obviously an old-timer guy. He coached at all levels in New York, and he got hired by the Phillies. And for an old-school guy, and I'm not an old-school guy, mind you, I'm 28, so I'm still in that new generation, millennial generation, technology generation, all that kind of stuff. But to hear from an old-school guy, you know, I grew up in that era of old school baseball. There was no replay. There was no nothing. You know what I'm saying? It's you're either, you know, changing a call by arguing, or you're getting ejected. You know, there's no replay. There's no nothing. And it's scary to think what this game may turn into in the next 5 years. I'm actually terrified by it. The good thing at the college level that we don't have to deal with any of that. So when we do our recruiting and we do our scouting, we do it by whatever meets the eye and whatever the stopwatch says or whatever the radar gun says. We don't care about launch angle metrics or, you know, exit velocity. Well, that we like a little bit because that shows the strength level, but it's not a metric that we're using to recruit. You know what I'm saying? Like the naked eye, the eye test is what's going to show you what a ball player is and what's not. You know, if I taught a 19-year-old kid how to, or a 20-year-old kid, how to lift the ball more based on launch angle. I mean, if they got that and they were able to use that to their advantage, I'd be shocked. I'd be absolutely shocked. So luckily at the college level coaching, we don't have to worry about any of those metrics. We're just going to find our workhorse on the mound, and we're going to put them against the best team hitting team in the conference, and we're going to hope that our pitching duel beats their hitting. Period, amen. Yeah. We're going to still bunt with metal bats. We're still going to double steal with metal bats and all that stuff. It's still there. So for me, I'm a baseball purist. I don't want to see the game be run by technology. And mind you, too, not to go on too much of a rant, because you definitely hit a nice spot there with that. I'm a catcher. Okay, I'm a catcher. So you know where I'm going with this. They're talking about an automated strike zone coming up.
Uh-huh.
So what that's becoming now is, now you take away one of the major tools of catching, which is actually two major tools, one being physical, one being mental. The physical side of it is receiving and framing. The other side of it is umpire relationship. Those two things as a catcher is something that goes into grading when it comes to recruiting or scouting or drafting. That's a big thing for catching. If a person frames, I mean, that's one element of a stat chart for a catcher when he's being recruited by a college or by a pro team. How good is his framing from 1 to 5? You take that away. Now, and I was watching, I was listening to a podcast. Buster Olney had it. I was driving up to a show on Friday to Massachusetts, and I was listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast, and I forget who he had on, maybe A.J. Ellis, I think, an old school catcher. And he was talking about it, and he's saying, you know, what will happen now is that they're going to take the catching position, if they do this, which I think they really may, because I know they were trying it in one of the Gulf Coast leagues or something like that. They had a trial run of this automated strike zone. But if they do this, what it's going to be is that the catching position is going to go from a defensive position to an offensive position. And basically what you're going to do is you're going to take a DH, you're going to put him behind the plate, and you're going to make sure he can block a ball. That's all that matters. Other than that, he's got to catch, be able to catch a various amount of pitches and be able to block and have a decent enough arm to control a run game. But if you look at the pitching now, pitching coaches work so closely with pitching for their how quick they can get to the plate and how to hold runners on that even the throws for a catcher isn't so magnified this day and age as it was back in the day with Pudge and even my guy Mike Piazza. They used to hate on him for his arm.
Yeah.
But you know, in this era right now, with the way that runners are being able to be held on by the pitching, I don't think his arm would be even criticized that much.
Mm-mm.
Which is a crazy thing. So, I mean, that scares me more than anything with how this game is changing. Just how it's going to affect positions. Another big change that's going to affect a person's livelihood and a person's job is the lefty specialist.
Yeah.
If you go with this three-person rule before you can yank a pitcher, now you're looking at a lefty specialist job being thrown out the window. Someone as valuable as Jerry Blevins back in the 2015-2016 season for the Mets, I mean, he's virtually useless now if you go with this job.
Yeah, yeah. You got guys that are conditioned for it. Guys that can only really handle that either have to convert themselves back into a starter if they're not that far into their career, or they got to find a way to kind of put up or shut up.
That's it. You gotta find out how to get a right hander out. That's it. And you know damn well by especially by watching the Mets and their bullpen. I mean, these left-handed guys can't get right behind the batters out. And same thing with starters for the most part. You could see the challenge that some of these pitchers have when it comes to a lefty and a righty. So. To see, you know, some of these rules come into play, I really, not to sound like Keith Hernandez or some of these, you know, these announcers that just shit on the current state of the game, but it's true. I mean, we're changing the game for the worse, and we're changing it drastically. It's not like little minor rules that are going to, you know, benefit the game's pace or, and that's another thing too. I mean, if you're a baseball fan and you love baseball, you don't care how long the game is. Baseball is the only sport that can be a three-hour game that feels like 30 minutes.
Yeah, that's insane. Remember Steve Traxel on the mound?
Tell me about it. I love Steve Traxel. I don't care about how long he took to pitch a game.
No, it's something else.
You know, I mean, Traxel, he was a pitcher. He was a pitcher, man. He wanted to call his game how it was, and that's it.
It's crazy, and it was the Atlantic League that tried out that automated strike zone, and they called a neck-high strike that ended up getting the manager ejected. And, you know, it's like, well, what do you expect? I mean, remember Tom Glavine back in the day was arguing the Quest Tech, and that was in 2002. So think about how far that argument's come, you know, almost 20 years later. Yeah. And if they're going to – there's no way it's going to happen. I just can't see it. It's way too on the cusp of being, you know, literally, why don't we just put the robots in the batter's box next?
That's it. That's the problem. And the umpire, it's the beauty of the human element of and the human mistake in sports, mind you. If it goes against your team, it's shitty as hell. But it's part of the game. It's part of what makes the game so good. It's part of what makes an umpire good. I mean, you know, these are things that make baseball great and make the game great. Like, you know, nothing to me, one of the most exciting things, even as a coach, you know, to argue with an umpire, it's a thrill. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's something about it. I don't want to, you know, be proved right by a machine. I want to be told by the umpire who merged and have a conversation if the call was right. I want to be told that I'm right because they messed up, not because a computer's telling me, yeah, no, this is exactly what happened at this exact frame rate, at this speed, at this angle. Screw that. You know what I'm saying? Come up with the XBL. You know, come up with something like that. We don't, you know, the XFL is there for that. We'll come up with an extreme baseball league.
Yeah, is Vince, can we get VKM on a phone? Can we, maybe Triple H can start that one. Maybe Triple H is a secret baseball fan. But
put in a memo for that.
Exactly, yeah. Before you get into your midnight workouts with DeFalco and Triple H, let's talk about the Mets before we get into the wrap-up, all right? What is it about this team that keeps us coming back for more? I mean, I'm a little older than you, so I've been dealing with it for a tad bit longer in my life, but what is it about this team that keeps us coming back every single year fighting?
You know what? It's really hard to explain that because only Met fans know what it's like to be a Met fan. And I like to say it's really, you just got to believe in the underdog, man. That's what it comes down to. It's like these guys, I grew up in the 90s. The Yankees won all the time. And I could, and they won in 2000, and it was tough. But they just, it was just, there was something about the Mets, the colors, the history behind them, the personalities. It just, it seemed different than what you were used to from the Yankees. The Yankees, to me, they were just always bland. There was never anything to them. There wasn't any fight to it. Even the old stadium, may it rest in peace, as historic as it is, it was bland. You know, like Shea Stadium looked like a dump, but it was blue and orange. It was roaring. I mean, the crowd was just always loud. It was just, there's a passion behind Met fans that are different than any other team in the entire major, in the entire world. That's what it comes down to. And it's funny, too, because you hear it. Like, when you see these polls that Major League Baseball puts out or Bleacher Report puts out, where it says, like, the most passionate fans in Major League Baseball, the Mets are always in the top five.
Yeah.
They're always in the top five. You know, there's no question about it. The Mets just have... they have this ability to just suck you in and make you want to watch them and cheer for them. And no matter how they break your hearts countless times, years after years, they just, you just know that when the big day comes, it's going to be better than anything.
Yeah, when is that going to happen? Is it this year?
I'm telling you, they were close. They're on the cusp. And I don't want to sound like another ignorant Met fan.
If
you look at the pieces in place here, this is a team that can do it. You can't imagine that Familia and Diaz are going to have a worse year than they had last year. It's impossible, unless they're done. Unless both of them, this is their final years to ever play. You can't possibly have a worse year than you had last year.
No.
But Kansas has something to prove. He has a 1-year contract. Yankees did him dirty. He hasn't pitched in a year. He has something to prove to come back. He loves to play for New York. He struck me out 3 times, by the way, but Kansas. so that's a fun thing to tip my cap
that's,
on.
That's something I feel very good about now.
Yes, I do too. I had no chance. you look at that. You have Lugo, who is just, to be honest with you, Lugo's elite. I would, if they didn't make those two signings this year with Porcello and Waka, I put Lugo in the rotation because he just shows that he's just dominant. He shows that he has the ability to get batters out.
Yeah.
But now you look at him from a bullpen standpoint, especially if he somehow becomes the closer again. The biggest thing about closers, when it comes to closers, is that, especially you look at Mariano Rivera, they have one dominant pitch for one inning. Seth Lugo has 5. That is unheard of when it comes to the closer position. Familia has the split finger fastball. That's one. When he was dominant in 2015, he had the split finger fastball. Mariano Rivera had the cutter. You know, like you look at all these guys, Trevor Hoffman had that slider. The list goes on. They have one pitch that lights out 99% of the time. Lugo has 5. So you look at him, he hit this promise. And you have Gazelman. You got a bunch of guys that really have the ability to really, you know, the biggest problem last year was the bullpen. You have a bunch of guys now that can really solidify that. You look at the lineup speaks for itself. Granted, I don't think Pete's going to have another 53 home run season, but I don't think he's going to have a sophomore slump like that.
Exactly.
I think MLB projected him to have 44 homers this year. Pretty damn good, if you ask me.
Yeah, no slouch, right? Yeah, I know, just like every other Met fan that I would talk to, that beginning of August, you know, into mid-August was our World Series, that was our playoffs. That was some of the most fun that I've had in 25 years plus, watching games.
Totally.
Oh, that was just a ball.
I remember I was at a show in Massachusetts, and I finished my match, and I was sitting down, I was getting undressed, and the Met game on my phone. And they all know I'm a Met fan in Massachusetts. But luckily, they don't hate the Mets like they hate the Yankees. So but they're all ribbing me. They're all making fun of me. Oh, they're going to break your heart again, all this shit. And I'm sitting, I'm watching Mets Nationals right during the fucking heat of that run, where it's like, this is going to be fun. And Todd Frazier grand slam. And it's before he got up, I'm sitting, I'm like, he's going to tie this game up. It was 2 out, bases loaded. I think Doolittle was on the mound.
Yep,
and
Doolittle.
We owned Doolittle last year. We owned them last year. And I said, he's about to tie this game up. And he hit that home run, and then Conforto hit the single where they took off the shirt and all that stuff. And I'm like, this feels like 2015 all over again. This is crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just that one Cubs game. And mind you, too, I mean, they were in it to the end. They were in it to the end. I remember it was that one last series against the Phillies? At the end of the year.
The end of the year, it was the Braves. Well, right before the Braves came in, you talk about that one? Wasn't it the Nats again?
It was someone. They were in it for like the last 6 games. They had to basically win out, and they ended up losing. You know who it was? It was another. I think it was the Reds. I think it was another team that wasn't so good.
Yes,
I don't remember who it was. But it wasn't
I think you're right. Or the Rockies or something.
It was something that was not that good. They ended up beating us that one game and we were officially eliminated. But, I mean, it was fun. It was fun. And I think this team has a chip on their shoulder going into 2020. I think Beltran as the manager is going to be different. Mind you, I don't know. I personally, I didn't want Mickey to stay, but I wasn't sure that I was ready. I didn't think he was totally justified to be fired.
Yeah.
I knew with the new regime, Brody wanted his guy and all that stuff, but I don't think Mickey did a terrible job last year. I mean, we won 87 games. It's pretty good.
No, not
pretty
last
good,
year.
You know?
Not last year. I think he was fired also because of that year before and that absolute, oh my God, that abomination, the batting out of order, all the laissez-faire, you know, reactions to all the big things. He just, I just was not a fan of Callaway. Good riddance.
Never
have
get
fun.
You know what's crazy?
What?
I look at New York and I look at it. I remember Rex Ryan. I don't know if you follow football like that.
Yeah, I do. Absolutely.
So when Rex Ryan coached the Jets, he got a lot of criticism because he was just like, we're going to beat everyone. I'm loud. I'm crazy. We love that. And then the Jets hired Todd Bowles, and he had zero personality, zero emotion. And New Yorkers can't handle that. So
no.
When they hired Mickey Callaway, you went from Terry Collins, who was this little 5'8" firecracker. I love Terry. And then you went to Mickey. And you have this calm guy, and it's like, yeah, you know, we're going to go out there every day, and we're going to play our best, and we're going to win. We're going to do what we got to do. And it was just like you couldn't connect with it. Beltran is kind of more similar to Mickey than he was Kerry, but to me, Beltran's a little bit more intimidating.
Yeah.
You know, there's a fire to Beltran. So we'll see.
Yeah. Well, we've seen Beltran. We know what to expect when he gets pissed off. We've seen him, you know, argue with umps. I mean, like, that's one thing with me. There's track record there. And although, yes, haha, you know, the sign stealing, he could have taken the pitch or whatever. Ha ha ha. We all get it. Yeah, very funny. Paul LaDuca, that was great. But, you know, we saw this guy and what he's made of, and hopefully it is a good year. So let's go, Mets. Before I get to the wrap up and to the plugs, got to ask you, besides Piazza, who, I mean, come on, a Italian kid from Brooklyn who catches. I mean, all right, we're going to take Piazza out of the favorite all-time Met question. Give me one or two other personal favorite Mets. And this is one thing I've established on this show. As a Met fan, you don't always – your guy is never always the big guy. You have a fringe guy who, you know, only Met fans are going to know that's your favorite player. So who else do you got? Give me one or two more names.
That's wild. Okay, so more obvious, I'm going to go with Keith Hernandez.
Okay. Can't go
I love Keith. Keith is one of the best pure hitters I've ever seen. And he's a badass. He used to smoke in the dugout, drank beer, all that good stuff. Anyone on the 86 team was like that. If you want to get more obscure Mets, okay, give me a second, because I've had a few. I've had a few that I was really like, all right, I like this guy. He's kind of a badass. Let's think. So more recent, let's think, Daniel Murphy, obviously, he's got to be one of them. I think many Met fans can say Daniel Murphy, especially if you grew up a little bit later in the early 2000s and stuff like that. I think Daniel Murphy could definitely be one of the people's favorite players. But Daniel Murphy, for me, I mean, I could not imagine him leaving the way he did.
That was terrible.
So, single-handedly brought us to the World Series. I mean, if he didn't have that error in Game 4, whatever it was, Game 5, he could have helped us win the World Series.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, Daniel Murphy's definitely one of them. When it comes to obscure Mets, I mean, I'm not really sure. I'll be honest with you. I mean, I love a guy like Joe McEwing.
Yes,
I think
that's
everyone
great
loves
one.
Joe McEwing.
Yeah. Great one.
Everyone loves Joe McEwing. I like Shinjo. Tanoshi Shinjo.
I was thinking him.
Shinjo's a little crazy. Benny Agbayani's a cult hero, so
yeah.
I don't want to say Benny Agbayani because everyone would know him. It's impossible to say you can't root for John Franco because another Italian guy from Brooklyn. Johnny Franco's the man. But I think, though, that's probably my core group of guys that I'm like, those. I mean, Gary Carter's another one as another catcher. I mean, Gary Carter's the man. But, you know, those seem to be the crop of guys that I really, really like.
Gary Carter's my all-time favorite. So you got one box checked there. But, I mean, come on. I went for a 2-3-year period where Joe Orsolac and Rico Bronya were my favorite players. So, I mean, like, that's...
There you go.
But only Met fans will get that kind of stuff. All right, Mike.
And Brian McCray.
Yeah. Oh, God. Forget about it. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. All right. But as we get into wrap up here, We talked about your wrestling background. We talked about your baseball background. Tell the listeners of Diamond Conversations where they can find anything going on in your world, you know, your social media, if you got any shows coming up. Tell us where we can find you. This was a lot of fun. And like I said, you know, bringing my wrestling world and my baseball world together, it's a perfect marriage. There's not many people I can get on the show that can bring it together as well as you did, but share with us where we can find you.
I got to tell you first, Chad, this was one of my favorite podcasts I've ever done because, like you said, it's not very often that I get to actually talk in detail about my passion, which is baseball, on a podcast. You know, my career in wrestling has gotten me countless podcasts and interviews, but we only touch on baseball. We don't get into detail. We don't talk the game. We don't BS about the good times and the bad times. So I thank you for reaching out to me. I thank you for having me on the show, and I truly, truly would like to be back on it in
Absolutely.
Any kind of fashion.
Yeah.
If you ever want to have someone on there we can duel with or debate or talk trades and all that stuff, you can call me anytime. I would love to do this again. And in regards to my plug, you can follow me, Man of Steel MV. That's Man of Steel like Superman, and then MV for Mike Verna. Those are all my social media handles. You can follow me. You can see whatever shows I'm doing, when I'm coaching, when the season starts, any rant I have to say about baseball, anything related to baseball or wrestling, you can definitely find on my social media accounts. Please give me a follow. We can talk. We'll conversate. Any baseball questions, shoot me a message. I would love to talk to you about it. And please, thank you for the support.
Absolutely. And before you go, who's got better Mets attire, you or Kurt Hawkins?
Ooh, so now that, well, listen, Kurt, to me, Brian's got the, he seems to be going the old school route. He's doing the black orange.
Oh, okay. All right.
I've been seeing him doing like the early 2000s black and orange, which, mind you, I think is coming back this
it
year
is.
For a Friday night.
It is indeed.
You know, I got that feeling. We're gonna see a little bit of more black, blue, and orange this year. I don't know. Me and Brian, I told Brian, when he got released first, I was like, we got a tag before you go back. And we still have it. But I'm going to hold him to it.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth search projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.